The Fellowship of the Ring, Cassette 2.
Chapter 2. The Shadow of the Past. The talk didn't die down in 9 or even 99 days. The second disappearance of Mr. Bilbo Baggins was discussed in Hobbiton, and indeed all over the Shire, for a year and a day, and was remembered much longer than that. It became a fireside story for young hobbits, and eventually Mad Baggins, who used to vanish with a bang and a flash and reappear with bags of jewels and gold, became a favourite character of legend, and lived on long after all the true events were forgotten. But in the meantime, the general opinion in the neighbourhood was that Bilbo, who had always been rather cracked, had at last gone quite mad and had run off into the blue. There he had undoubtedly fallen into a pool or a river and come to a tragic, but hardly an untimely, end. The blame was mostly laid on Gandalf.
"If only that dratted wizard will leave young Frodo alone, perhaps he'll settle down and grow some hobbit sense," they said. And to all appearance the wizard did leave Frodo alone, and he did settle down, but the growth of hobbit sense was not very noticeable. Indeed, he at once began to carry on Bilbo's reputation for oddity. He refused to go into mourning, and the next year he gave a party in honour of Bilbo's 112th birthday, which he called a hundredweight feast. But that was short of the mark, for 20 guests were invited, and there were several meals at which it snowed food and rained drink, as hobbits say. Some people were rather shocked, but Frodo kept up the custom of giving Bilbo's birthday party year after year until they got used to it. He said that he did not think Bilbo was dead. When they asked, "Where is he, then?" he shrugged his shoulders. He lived alone, as Bilbo had done, but he had a good many friends, especially among the younger hobbits, mostly descendants of the old Took, who had as children been fond of Bilbo and often in and out of Bag End. Falco Boffin and Fredegar Bulger were two of these, but his closest friends were Peregrine Took, usually called Pippin, and Merry Brandybuck. His real name was Meriadoc, but that was seldom remembered. Frodo went tramping over the Shire with them, but more often he wandered by himself, and to the amazement of sensible folk he was sometimes seen far from home, walking in the hills and woods under the starlight. Merry and Pippin suspected that he visited the elves at times, as Bilbo had done. As time went on, people began to notice that Frodo also showed signs of good preservation. Outwardly he retained the appearance of a robust and energetic hobbit just out of his tweens. "Some folk have all the luck," they said. But it was not until Frodo approached the usually more sober age of 50 that they began to think it queer. Frodo himself, after the first shock, found that being his own master and the Mr. Baggins of Bag End was rather pleasant. For some years he was quite happy and did not worry much about the future. But half unknown to himself, the regret that he had not gone with Bilbo was steadily growing. He found himself wondering at times, especially in the autumn, about the wildlands, and strange visions of mountains that he had never seen came into his dreams. He began to say to himself, "Perhaps I shall cross the river myself one day," to which the other half of his mind always replied, "Not yet." So it went on, until his 40s were running out, and his 50th birthday was drawing near. 50 was a number that he felt was somehow significant, or ominous. It was at any rate at that age that adventure had suddenly befallen Bilbo. Frodo began to feel restless, and the old paths seemed too well trodden. He looked at maps, and wondered what lay beyond their edges. Maps made in the Shire showed mostly white spaces beyond its borders. He took to wandering further afield and more often by himself. And Merry and his other friends watched him anxiously. Often he was seen walking and talking with the strange wayfarers that began at this time to appear in the Shire. There were rumours of strange things happening in the world outside.
and as Gandalf had not at that time appeared or sent any message for several years, Frodo gathered all the news he could. Elves, who seldom walked in the Shire, could now be seen passing westward through the woods in the evening, passing and not returning. But they were leaving Middle-earth, and were no longer concerned with its troubles. There were, however, dwarves on the road, in unusual numbers. The ancient east-west road ran through the Shire to its end at the Grey Havens, and dwarves had always used it on their way to their mines in the Blue Mountains. They were the hobbits' chief source of news from distant parts, if they wanted any. As a rule, dwarves said little and hobbits asked no more. But now Frodo often met strange dwarves of far countries, seeking refuge in the west. They were troubled, and some spoke in whispers of the enemy and of the land of Mordor. That name the hobbits only knew in legends of the dark past, like a shadow in the background of their memories, but it was ominous and disquieting. It seemed that the evil power in Mirkwood had been driven out by the White Council, only to reappear in greater strength than the old strongholds of Mordor. The Dark Tower had been rebuilt, it was said. From there the power was spreading far and wide, and away far east and south there were wars and growing fears. Orcs were multiplying again in the mountains. Trolls were abroad, no longer dull-witted, but cunning and armed with dreadful weapons. And there were murmured hints of creatures more terrible than all these, but they had no name. Little of all this, of course, reached the ears of ordinary hobbits, but even the deafest and most stay-at-home began to hear queer tales, and those whose business took them to the borders saw strange things. The conversation in the Green Dragon at Bywater, one evening in the spring of Frodo's 50th year, showed that even in the comfortable heart of the Shire rumours had been heard, though most hobbits still laughed at them. Sam Gamgee was sitting in one corner near the fire, and opposite him was Ted Sandeman, the miller's son, and there were various other rustic hobbits listening to their talk.
"Queer things you do here these days, to be sure," said Sam.
"Ah," said Ted, "you do, if you listen. But I can hear fireside tales and children's stories at home if I want to."
"No doubt you can," retorted Sam. "And I dare say there's more truth in some of them than you reckon. Who invented the stories anyway? Take dragons now."
"No, thank ye," said Ted. "I won't. I heard tell of them when I was a youngster, but there's no call to believe in them now. There's only one dragon in Bywater, and that's green," he said, getting a general laugh.
"All right," said Sam, laughing with the rest. "But what about these tree men, these giants, as you might call them? They do say that one bigger than a tree was seen up away beyond the North Moors not long back.
Who's they?"
"My cousin Hal, for one. He works for Mr. Boffin at Overhill and goes up to the North Farthing for the hunting. He saw one."
"Says he did, perhaps. Your Hal's always saying he's seen things, and maybe he sees things that ain't there."
"But this one was as big as an elm tree, and walking 7 yards to a stride if it was an inch."
"Then I bet it wasn't an inch. What he saw was an elm tree, as like as not."
"But this one was walking, I tell you, and there ain't no elm tree on the North Moors."
"Then Al can't have seen one," said Ted.
There was some laughter and clapping. The audience seemed to think that Ted had scored a point.
"All the same," said Sam, "you can't deny that others besides our Alfast have seen queer folk crossing the Shire. Crossing it, mind you. There are more that have turned back at the borders. The bounders have never been so busy before. And I've heard tell that elves are moving west. They do say they are going to the harbours, out away beyond the White Towers."
Sam waved his arm vaguely. Neither he nor any of them knew how far it was to the sea, past the old towers beyond the western borders of the Shire.
but it was an old tradition that away over there stood the Grey Havens, from which at times elven ships set sail, never to return. They're sailing, sailing, sailing over the sea. They're going into the west and leaving us, said Sam, half chanting the words, shaking his head sadly and solemnly. But Ted laughed.
Well, that isn't anything new, if you believe the old tales, and I don't see what it matters to me or you. Let them sail, but I warrant you haven't seen them doing it, nor anyone else in the Shire.
Well, I don't know, said Sam thoughtfully. He believed he had once seen an elf in the woods, and still hoped to see more one day. Of all the legends that he had heard in his early years, such fragments of tales and half-remembered stories about the elves as the hobbits knew had always moved him most deeply. There are some, even in these parts, as know the fair folk and get news of them, he said. There's Mr. Baggins now, that I work for. He told me that they were sailing, and he knows a bit about elves. And old Mr. Bilbo knew more. Many's the talk I had with him when I was a little lad.
Ah, they're both cracked, said Ted. Leastways old Bilbo was cracked, and Frodo's cracking. If that's where you get your news from, you'll never want for moonshine. Well, friends, I'm off home. Your good health.
He drained his mug and went out noisily. Sam sat silent and said no more. He had a good deal to think about. For one thing, there was a lot to do up in the Bag End garden, and he would have a busy day tomorrow if the weather cleared. The grass was growing fast, but Sam had more on his mind than gardening. After a while he sighed and got up and went out. It was early April, and the sky was now clearing after the heavy rain. The sun was down, and a cool, pale evening was quietly fading into night. He walked home under the early stars through Hobbiton and up the hill, whistling softly and thoughtfully. It was just at this time that Gandalf reappeared after his long absence. For 3 years after the party he had been away. Then he paid Frodo a brief visit, and after taking a good look at him, he went off again. During the next year or two he had turned up fairly often, coming unexpectedly after dusk, and going off without warning before sunrise. He would not discuss his own business and journeys, and seemed chiefly interested in small news about Frodo's health and doings. Then suddenly his visits had ceased. It was over 9 years since Frodo had seen or heard of him, and he had begun to think that the wizard would never return, and had given up all interest in hobbits. But that evening, as Sam was walking home and twilight was fading, there came the once familiar tap on the study window. Frodo welcomed his old friend with surprise and great delight. They looked hard at one another.
"All well, eh?" said Gandalf. "You look the same as ever, Frodo."
"So do you," Frodo replied. But secretly he thought that Gandalf looked older and more careworn. He pressed him for news of himself and of the wide world, and soon they were deep in talk, and they stayed up far into the night. Next morning, after a late breakfast, the wizard was sitting with Frodo by the open window of the study. A bright fire was on the hearth, but the sun was warm, and the wind was in the south. Everything looked fresh, and the new green of spring was shimmering in the fields and on the tips of the trees' fingers. Gandalf was thinking of a spring nearly 80 years before, when Bilbo had run out of Bag End without a handkerchief. His hair was perhaps whiter than it had been then, and his beard and eyebrows were perhaps longer, and his face more lined with care and wisdom. But his eyes were as bright as ever, and he smoked and blew smoke rings with the same vigour and delight. He was smoking now in silence, but Frodo was sitting still, deep in thought. Even in the light of morning he felt the dark shadow of the tidings that Gandalf had brought. At last he broke the silence. "Last night you began to tell me strange things about my ring, Gandalf," he said, "and then you stopped, because you said that such matters were best left until daylight. Don't you think that you had better finish now? You say the ring is dangerous, far more dangerous than I guess. In what ways?
In many ways, answered the wizard. It is far more powerful than I ever dared to think at first, so powerful that in the end it would utterly overcome any one of mortal race who possessed it. It would possess him. In a region long ago, many elven rings were made, magic rings, as you call them, and they were, of course, of various kinds, some more potent and some less. The lesser rings were only essays in the craft before it was full grown, and to the elven smiths they were but trifles, but still, to my mind, dangerous for mortals. But the great rings, the rings of power, they were perilous. A mortal, Frodo, who keeps one of the great rings, does not die, but he does not grow or obtain more life. He merely continues, until at last every minute is a weariness. And if he often uses the ring to make himself invisible, he fades. He becomes, in the end, invisible permanently, and walks in the twilight under the eye of the dark power that rules the rings. Yes, sooner or later. Later, if he is strong or well-meaning to begin with, but neither strength nor good purpose will last. Sooner or later the dark power will devour him.
How terrifying, said Frodo.
There was another long silence. The sound of Sam Gamgee cutting the lawn came in from the garden.
How long have you known this? Asked Frodo at length. And how much did Bilbo know?
Bilbo knew no more than he told you, I'm sure, said Gandalf. He would certainly never have passed on to you anything that he thought would be a danger, even though I promised to look after you. He thought the ring was very beautiful, and very useful at need, and if anything was wrong or queer, it was himself. He said that it was growing on his mind, and he was always worrying about it. But he didn't suspect that the ring itself was to blame. Though he had found out that the thing needed looking after, it didn't seem always of the same size or weight. It shrank or expanded in an odd way, and might suddenly slip off a finger where it had been tight.
Yes, he warned me of that in his last letter, said Frodo. So I've always kept it on its chain.
Very wise, said Gandalf. But as for his long life, Bilbo never connected it with the ring at all. He took all the credit for that to himself, and he was very proud of it. Though he was getting restless and uneasy, thin and stretched, he said, a sign that the ring was getting control.
How long have you known all this? Asked Frodo again.
Known? Said Gandalf. I've known much that only the wise know, Frodo. But if you mean known about this ring, well, I still do not know, one might say. There is a last test to make, but I no longer doubt my guess. When did I first begin to guess? He mused, searching back in his memory. Let me see, it was in the year that the White Council drove the Dark Power from Mirkwood, just before the Battle of Five Armies, that Bilbo found his ring. A shadow fell on my heart then, though I didn't know yet what I feared. I wondered often how Gollum came by a great ring. As plainly it was, that at least was clear from the first. Then I heard Bilbo's strange story of how he had won it, and I couldn't believe it. When I at last got the truth out of him, I saw at once that he had been trying to put his claim to the ring beyond a doubt, much like Gollum with his birthday present. The lies were too much alike for my comfort. Clearly the ring had an unwholesome power that set to work on its keeper at once. That was the first real warning I had that all was not well. I told Bilbo often that such rings were better left unused, but he resented it, and soon got angry. There was little else that I could do. I could not take it from him without doing greater harm, and I had no right to do so anyway. I could only watch and wait. I might perhaps have consulted Saruman the White, but something always held me back.
Who is he? Asked Frodo. I've never heard of him before.
Maybe not, answered Gandalf. Hobbits are, or were, no concern of his. yet he is great among the wise. He is the chief of my order and the head of the council. His knowledge is deep, but his pride has grown with it, and he takes ill any meddling. The lord of the elven rings, great and small, is his province. He has long studied it, seeking the lost secrets of their making. But when the rings were debated in the council, all that he would reveal to us of his ring lore told against my fears. So my doubt slept, but uneasily. Still I watched and I waited. And all seemed well with Bilbo. The years passed. Yes, they passed, and they seemed not to touch him. He showed no signs of age. The shadow fell on me again. But I said to myself, after all, he comes of a long-lived family on his mother's side. There is time yet. Wait. And I waited, until that night when he left this house. He said and did things then that filled me with a fear that no words of Saruman could allay. I knew at last that something dark and deadly was at work, and I have spent most of the years since then in finding out the truth of it. There wasn't any permanent harm done, was there? Asked Frodo anxiously. He would get all right in time, wouldn't he? Be able to rest in peace, I mean.